Thank you. شلون بشوف هاي وانا ما انزل فرقة جبت
شارجة هذا ترى هذا شيء شيء ما Divine Grace, they see Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishna Vrindaki Jai. Namacharya Shri Das Thakur Jai. Vrindaka Ho Shri Krishna Chaitanya. Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakti Vrindaki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shri Vakunda Radha Kundaki Govardhan. Shri Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Shri Navadvip Mayapur Dham ki jai, Ganga Mai ki jai, Yamuna Mai ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, glories to Shri Guru and Shri Guru. So today is a wonderful day, auspicious day, Gaur Purnima, marking the birth of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the golden avatar of all Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pridayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gurdhase Namaha, most magnanimous avatar.
No promises about biting.
I guess it was revenge. So, why is Lord Chaitanya described as the most magnanimous? Why? Now, this is interactive. You can't just sit there passively. Yes? Yeah, you can't just quote a verse. You have to explain.
Because he's bringing the topmost love of Godhead. Krishna has come in the form of Lord Brahma and he's distributing it freely to anyone.
Yeah, I think this is the key word, that there's no conditions. Previously there were conditions, sarva dharman buddhitya jamam ekam sharanam raja, that there had to be surrender, and there were some conditions. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't make any conditions. He just asked people to chant the holy name. And if they did so, they would be benedicted beyond their wildest dreams. So, Namo Mahavadanyaya, so compassionate and merciful. So, this is one of the aspects of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this audharya, it's called audharya, magnanimity. Magnanimous means that he is the embodiment of compassion. This is the quality also of Srimati Radharani of Dharya. So, this very merciful, compassionate, magnanimous personality, today he appeared in this world. I don't know exactly the number of years now.
500.
It's more than 500.
526.
526, thank you. Could we have some people that still remember their math? Prior to the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I can find this, guys. This is Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives a little bit of a description what it was like prior to the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. I'm just trying to find it. Boy, this is typical. I thought I had it all. Anyway, the situation was pretty awful. I'll just describe it. At that time in Navadvip, it was a center of learning. There were certain centers of learning over India, or in the Varanasi, and so many different places. But Navadvip at that time was considered one of the hot spots, you could say, for scholarship. People came there basically to study Nyaya, which is logic, and they would debate endlessly. And whoever was the most expert debater would be glorified. But generally, the activities at that time were demigod worship, essentially. And even they did crazy things like they would sometimes dress up animals and have animal weddings and things like that. And when they would worship the deities, they would plunge them into the river afterwards. They had all kinds of strange practices, and there was no tinge of bhakti. Now, there was a small group of devotees headed by Dvaitacharya Srivas Thakur, and they were in tremendous distress because wherever they went, people were criticizing. Not only criticizing, but even threatening. They threatened to take the whole house and grounds. They were going to take the house of Srivas Thakur and throw it into the Ganges. They threatened. And they laughed. And they made jokes at the Vaishnavas' expense. And the Vaishnavas were actually feeling a lot of anxiety. Especially Advaitacharya was very concerned. And he was the head of the Brahmin community, but he was quite irritated with the way these people were behaving. And at one point, when the devotees were being particularly oppressed, he got very irritated. This is all described in Chaitanya Bhagavat. I might read some of that later. How much time do we have? Okay. So, he got really irritated. And he said, I will cause the Lord to descend. He said, and if I cannot cause him to descend, I will assume a forearm form and I'll personally kill all these people with my chakra. So, he was quite determined. So, he began to worship the Lord, as you know, with Ganges water and Tulsi. And with loud cries, he was actually shouting out, crying out for the Lord to come. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that actually the reason he came was because of Dvaitacharya's entreaties. So the situation was not very good. And even after the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as some of you know, things didn't get a whole lot better quickly, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was kind of playing the pastimes of being a scholar. And so he also used to kind of tease the Vaishnavas initially. But somehow they didn't mind it, because there was something so attractive about him, and even when he was teasing them, they felt sort of an affection or attraction for him. Of course, that all changed later. But I was going to read a little bit of a description of the situation leading up to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. Vrindavan Das Thakur, of course, has written Chaitanya Bhagavat, and it was commented on by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So this, all the commentary in here is from his purports. Prabhupada, of course, used Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's purporting to the Chaitanya Charitamrita also to explain the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, at the beginning of this, there is a description about the different devotees that are appearing prior to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's descent. And there it says that Sri Chaitanya descended to deliver the entire universe. He has confirmed this with his own words. The Lord had his devotees who are equal to him appear at impious places and in impious families, in order to deliver everyone. Can anybody think of somebody that might have taken birth in an impious place. Yes. Aryas Thakur. Well, he took birth in an impious family and in not a particularly pious place either. Anybody else? Well, no, we're talking about at the time of Lord Chaitanya. Actually, Nityananda Prabhu, where he took birth, was not considered a great place. And of course, it became a wonderful place by his appearing there. But they took birth in all kinds of families, not necessarily Brahmin families, sometimes even Shudra families, Kayasta families. And it says, the interesting thing in this verse is who are equal to him. And there's a discussion here. This is actually these Vaishnavas were capable of delivering the whole world themselves. But they came to take part in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It says, in whatever place or family a Vaishnava appears, people for hundreds of thousands of miles around are all delivered. So this is quite an extraordinary statement. Hundreds and thousands, it says, yeah, Laksha Yojana, it says. So wherever the Vaishnavas go, that place becomes a sanctified place of pilgrimage. So just like this place, sanctified place of pilgrimage. Because Lord's pure devotee came here. Of course, the Lord himself is here. But there's a description earlier in this chapter. It's very interesting. It says that, it says most of the Vaishnavas took birth. No, here it is. Some took birth in Navadvip, some in Chattagram, some in Radha Desh, some in Orissa, some in Srihatta, and some in the West. Although the devotees appeared in different places, they all gathered in Navadvip. Most of the Vaishnavas took birth in Navadvip, and some beloved associates appeared elsewhere. Srivas Pandit, Sri Ram Pandit, and Sri Chandrasekhar are worshipped throughout the three worlds. They, along with Sri Murari Gupta, who cures the living entities of their material disease, all took birth in Srihatta. Now, as some of you know, that Murari Gupta was one of the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that kept elaborate notebooks with all the early pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, which a lot of the later literatures are based on. Anything about his early childhood pastimes, youth, this is described by Murari Gupta. He was a physician, but he was a great devotee of Lord Ramachandra. But it says that he could cure both material and spiritual diseases. Bhavarog is the material disease. What, does anybody know what Bhavaroga is? Bhavarog.
Bhava means material existence.
Yeah.
Rog means disease.
Yeah, so the disease of material existence, or the disease of birth and death, this disease he could cure. Actually, one time in Vrindavan, Prabhupada was, one of his life members was a magician. And he wanted to do a magic show for Prabhupada. So Prabhupada agreed to it, and he called for the Gurukula students to come down and see it also. So this magician was doing all these amazing tricks with coins and things disappearing and appearing. He was like pulling coins out of Prabhupada's ears and things like that. And some of the devotees were thinking, well, this is not very respectful. But Prabhupada seemed to be really enjoying it. He was laughing. So then when he was finished with his show, Prabhupada said, that's very good. He said, can you make birth, death, old age, and disease disappear? And the magician said, no, Swamiji, I don't know that trick. Prabhupada said, but I know that trick. So this is Murari Gupta, who could make birth, death, old age, and disappear. Pundari Vidyanidhi, the topmost Vaishnava, Chaitanya Vallabha, Vasudev Dutta, all appeared in Chattagram. Haridasa Kaur appeared in the village of Budhana. The Supreme Lord Nityananda appeared in the village of Eka Chakra in Radhadesh. The ocean of mercy, the giver of devotional service, and the shelter of all Vaishnavas, Sri Nityananda Ram, appeared in Radhadesh. As you know, Vrindavanasa Kaur is very partial to Lord Nityananda. So you can practically hear the exclamation point here. He says, the ocean of mercy, the giver of devotional service, and the shelter of all Vaishnavas, Sri Nityananda Ram appeared in Radhadesh.
Hey,
from From that day on, the land of Radha began to prosper, and signs of auspiciousness became visible, so it wasn't doing so well before that. Paramananda Puri, who enjoyed pastimes of the Lord in Nilachala, appeared at Trihuta. Out of compassion, Lord Krishna ordered his great devotees to appear in places where the Ganges does not flow, where the holy names are not chanted, and where the Pandavas did not visit. Sri Chaitanya descended to deliver the entire universe, he has confirmed this. So, they've all appeared in all these different places. This is kind of like setting the scene, you know, in Bhagavad Gita, the first chapter, setting the scene. So this is setting the scene. All these great devotees have appeared. Then you have this terrible situation in Navadvipa, that despite the presence of Vaishnavas, still there was so much in the way of atheism, demigod worship, Vaishnava Bharat. It was a very inauspicious situation. But the Lord, these devotees began to gather there. But at that time, it says, there was no place comparable to Navadvipa. As far as a place of learning, of course, you know, we're not that we're interested in that type of learning, but this, at that time, this is what was valued. So 100,000 people would take birth at one bathing ghat. By the merciful glance of Saraswati, the goddess of learning, hundreds of thousands of children, youths, and old people were expert in the scriptures. They were all proud of being great scholars. Even a young boy would challenge his teacher. Many people came from various provinces to study in Navadvipa because by studying there, one achieved a taste for education. Therefore, no one could count the innumerable students and millions of teachers gathered there. Well, so it was a pretty amazing place, apparently. It says, by the merciful glance of Rama, the goddess of fortune, everyone lived happily there, but they wasted their time in mundane activities. The whole universe was devoid of devotion to Krishna and Balaram. The future symptoms of the age of Kali became manifest in the beginning of the age. People's religion consisted of fruitive activities, and they would stay awake through the night chanting prayers to Mangala Chandi, goddess Durga. Some people proudly worshipped Disha Hari, the goddess of snakes, and others spent great wealth on idol worship. Well, this is an interesting... to read this purport is interesting. Ordinary people, particularly the rich mercantile community, lavishly spent money for the worship of Manasa Devi, another name of Vishahari. They purchased the entire Brahmana and Pandit communities and kept them under their control. They had various idols and deities of demigods and goddesses made, and they donated large sums of money in charity. Even today, the practice of making various kinds of idols is current at the time of Rasa Yatra. Instead of serving the deity of the Supreme Lord on the spiritual platform, they followed the system of idol worship and spent huge amounts of money on festivals. Later, they immersed those idols in the water and proved the flickering nature of their worship. Bhaktisiddhanta doesn't have much patience with it. He talks about their flickering worship. Because they spent large amounts of money on useless purposes, the worship of deities such as Sri Jagannath Dev was rarely found in Bengal. It says that in the second line, it even indicates that they were so maddened with material enjoyment that they used to spend money in marriage ceremonies between male and female monkeys, cats, and dolls. He comments, in this way they increased their aversion to the Lord. Now here's another one for those who may still be inclined to this sort of thing. I'm not saying anything more than that. People squandered money on the marriages of their sons and daughters. In this way, they wasted their human lives. Even the so-called scholars, the Bhattacharyas, Chakravartis, and Mishras, did not know the real purport of the scriptures. And even after teaching the scriptures, the teachers still engaged in such activities. As a result, both the teachers and the students were punished by Yamaraj. They never explained the religious principle for the age, chanting the names of the Lord. They only found faults with others. They never glorified anyone. So there was an intense atmosphere of criticism, fault-finding. They never discussed bhakti. They never discussed the Yuga Dharma. So This is just to give you some idea. All the so-called renunciates and ascetics never chanted the names of Hari. Only the most pious people would recite the names of Pundarikaksha and Govinda at the time of taking bath. Even when someone explained the Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, they would not mention anything about devotional service to the Lord. Seeing the entire world illusioned by the Lord's external energy in this way, all the devotees felt unlimited distress. They thought, how will these people be delivered? The whole world is simply absorbed in material enjoyment. People will not chant the names of Krishna even if they are instructed. Rather, they constantly glorify their education and good birth. You know, like the classic thing, I'm a Brahmin. I'm going to show you their thread. I remember years ago when I was just after university, I was going to the dormitories at this university where I had gone to school, door to door in the dormitories. It was probably illegal, but anyway. And I met a couple of Indian students, and they invited me in, and I was trying to get them to take a Krishna book. And they said, oh yes, we're Brahmins. And he pulled his thread out. And then later, you know, after I remember Prabhupada gave a number of lectures where he said, Brahmin thread only costs, what is it? He used to cost a couple of pice, five paisa. You can buy one for five paisa. And I asked him, well, you're a Brahmin, what do you do? He said, oh, nothing. So it was enough for him that he was born in a Brahmin family. So here, this is not a new thing here. It says that this is what they did. Residing in Navadvipa, though, at that time was Advaita Acharya. So he was very well respected. I mean, he was a powerful person. You can imagine the Lord as the topmost brahmana and leader of his community, and he could explain devotional service perfectly, and he did that. People didn't like to hear it much, but he would enthusiastically worship Krishna with Tulsi Manjaris and Ganges water. There's an interesting purport. It says Tulsi Manjari is a Mahabhagavat and Tadiya Vastu. Now, Tadiya, does everybody know about the concept of Tadiya? Tadiya, only one person. Is he the only one that reads in here? Yes, in the back. Go ahead. Yes, those things which are related to the Lord, like what? Yeah, or just like the devotees themselves. So there, and anything used by those devotees as well. That's why the things that Prabhupada actually used that are in his rooms at the manor, these things are considered to be completely on the same level as Krishna, because they're used by one of Krishna's persons, one he claims as his own. So it says that she's a Mahabhagavat and Tadiya Vastu, that which is related to the Supreme Lord. Gangajal refers to the nectar emanating from the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, or the ingredient used in worshipping Krishna. Various foodstuffs are offered to Krishna with Tulsi Manjaris, which are dear to Krishna, and Ganges water, which purifies the world. Śrīla Dvaita Prabhu began to continuously worship Krishna with such ingredients in order to amend the polluted form of Dwapara Yuga worship practiced at the time. So he was saying this worship superior to this elaborate deity worship that some people were attempting to imitate, but that was the process for self-realization in Dwapara Yuga, not Kali Yuga. So it says his intention was that living entities would give up sense gratification and become devotees by seeing the behavior of pure Mahajanas. He loudly called for Krishna and spiritual ecstasy. That sound vibration pierced the covering of the universe and was heard in the Vaikuntha planets. So apparently he didn't need any kind of amplification. He just was calling with pure devotion. And that sound, that shabda, that spiritual vibration actually pierced the coverings of the universe all the way to the spiritual world, where the Lord was listening. So it says here that in Bhaktisiddhanta says, Sri Advaita Acharya Prabhu engaged in ordinary service by chanting the names of Krishna, which crossed beyond these planets, born of the material modes of nature, and entered into the transcendental realm of Vaikuntha, which is free of all anxiety. On hearing Advaita Prabhu's cries of love, Lord Krishna personally appeared, for he is controlled by the love of his devotees. Therefore, Advaita Acharya is the best of all Vaishnavas. There is no comparison to his devotional service in the entire universe. Everyone in the entire world was engaged in materialistic activities. No one was engaged in worshiping or serving Krishna. Then he sort of, you can see the kind of ecstatic way that Vrindavan Das Thakur writes, because he kind of was talking about how miserable everything was, and all of a sudden he starts talking about these great devotees and how wonderful they are, and he kind of gets almost like ecstatic. But then he comes back to the way things were. You see, it's kind of like, oh yeah, that's right, I'm talking about how terrible everything was. So now he's back to this. He says, some people worship Vashuli, Chandi, or Durga with various ingredients, and some people worship the Yakshas with meat and wine. You can probably hear him going, ugh. Then people would constantly dance, sing, and play musical instruments in a great commotion. But they never heard the supremely auspicious names of Krishna. The devotees headed by Advaita Acharya were distressed on seeing the people engaged in so-called auspicious activities that were not related to Krishna. By nature, the heart of Advaita Acharya was full of compassion, so he mercifully contemplated how to deliver the living entities. If my Lord descends, then all these fallen souls will be delivered. So he's thinking, would be. So this is the nature of a Vaishnava. Their hearts are, as Krishna, their hearts are filled with compassion for the suffering. Actually, you know, I was with all the commuters this morning coming to London, you know, because the train I had to catch, that's who's on the train, all these people, and just the suffering was just etched on their faces. And now usually I don't care how much people are suffering. As long as I'm okay, I don't care what they do. But I was looking this morning, I actually felt like I have the privilege of going, you know, before the deities of Radha Nandanishwara to associate with the devotees and talk about the beautiful, glorious activities of Lord Chaitanya. And what have these guys got to look forward to? They're miserable. They're already miserable. They haven't even gotten to work yet. And I mean, I'm not laughing at them, but I'm saying, you know, just so much suffering was etched on their faces. It was like a mask of suffering. And I was thinking, how fortunate that only by Prabhupada's grace, by the grace of these great devotees, we have this opportunity. So we have to try to always remember our good fortune, because people are suffering like anything. And so therefore devotees are thinking like this. This is when I first went to New York to see Prabhupada, this was in 1971, he'd come to New York. At that time I was a hippie, some kind of, you know, hippie anyway, long hair. And I went with the devotees. We drove continuously from Florida to New York. It took us a couple of days. We didn't stop, really, except for gasoline. In those days, we did a lot of crazy stuff there. That was the standard then. You just got in the van, and say if you were in Florida and you had to go to California, it takes about 3 days. But you just drive continuously until you get there. You know, somebody sleeps in the back and you drive, and then you sleep in the back and they drive. So anyway, we got to New York. And I'd never seen Prabhupada and didn't know what to think. I've been reading a little bit and chanting 16 rounds for about a week. And, you know, I was enlivened, but I didn't know what to expect. So we were waiting on the steps in the Henry Street Temple, and Prabhupada's car pulled up and all the devotees were there. Was this intense atmosphere. Then Prabhupada got out of the car and it was like, I just felt like this tremendous relief, because it was like, well, to describe what it was like, it's hard, because trying to describe the presence of a pure devotee, but it was as though he was being projected from somewhere else. You know, like when you're in a movie theater, you see something on the screen, but you know that it's being projected from somewhere else onto this So it's like he was being projected into the material world. He, all of his movements, all of his expressions were completely different than any human I'd ever seen, because he wasn't human. He was an alien. No, he was, you know, he was an alien. He's a resident of the spiritual world, alien to this world anyway. But it was just the most extraordinary thing, and immediately I bowed down. And I remember when I was growing up, my father always used to say, he's a military man, strict military man. He would say, never bow down to anyone. And I had been reading this book. Some of you may have read these books. Oh, no, you're a different generation. But anyway, there was all these books about this this Indian, American Indian, or, well, Mexican Indian, an Indian that lived in Mexico. Anyway, he was a shaman. And very elevated mystic power, apparently. And sometimes his followers would bow down to him. So I was reading this book, and my father got a hold of it. He said, well, what are you reading? I said, well, here, you can read it. So he read it, and he became outraged. He said, he bowed down. I never bow down. You know, and that was his thing. But as soon as I saw Prabhupada, immediately I bowed down. I didn't even think about it. It was just automatic. So the lecture he gave that day, I can't remember so many of the details, but he was quoting those verses from the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj, where he's saying, the Lord's asking him to take some benediction. He says, I don't need anything. He said, but I'm very concerned for all these people that are rotting in material existence. I'm very concerned out of affection and love for these people who are suffering so much. So that's the heart of a Vaishnava. So we see Advaitacharya, this is eternally so. He says, he's thinking like that, all these people will be delivered if the Lord will come. Now, the question, of course, may be, well, why didn't Advaita just do it himself? But he's considering himself incapable. This is also the nature of a devotee. Even Prabhupada, when he arrived in New York, was thinking, what can I do? I mean, how am I going to do this? I have no idea. Unless the Lord helps me. So he says, my name is Advaita Singha. Apparently this is one of the names, Singha, lion. Will be justified when I cause the descent of the beloved Lord of Vaikuntha. I will make the Lord of Vaikuntha appear in this world, and we will dance, chant, and thus deliver the fallen living entities. Lord Chaitanya repeatedly confirmed that he incarnated due to the desire of Advaita Prabhu. So then Srivas Pandit was residing in Navadvip, where, Lord Chaitanya had many pastimes in the house of Srivas Pandit. A lot of the nocturnal kirtans took place in that place. Srivas Thakur, Srivasanda, is sometimes considered the birthplace of the Sankirtan movement. That's where it all began. So all these great personalities, Vrindavan Das Thakur gives a kind of a long list of all these great devotees. He said Chandrasekhar, Jagadish, Gopinath, Sriman Pandit. Just their names themselves are auspicious, so that's why I'm repeating them. Murari Gupta, Sri Garuda Pandit, and Gangadas all took birth before the Lord. All these devotees were engaged in their prescribed duties. They were all magnanimous. So we say the magnanimous avatar, but all these devotees are magnanimous. They're in the same mood. Let us find some way to benedict all the living entities. So they had very friendly relationships with each other, but they didn't know. It says here, although they were unaware of each other's identity. So they were very friendly. They were all Vaishnavas, but they didn't know, this person's actually Hanuman. They didn't know, it says. The hearts of these devotees burned on seeing the people of the world devoid of devotion to Lord Vishnu. I think it's hard sometimes for us perhaps to identify with that type of intensity. You know, that they are actually suffering, and not on their own behalf at all. Like, that's what Prahlad says also. For myself, I'm okay. I mean, I've got you. You know, there's a sense of possession. The devotees have a sense of possession towards Krishna, my Krishna. And this is natural. When you love somebody, there's a sense of possessiveness. Of course, there's mundane possessiveness, and there's this sort of spiritual attachment. But here it says their hearts were burning to see this. They were suffering, actually. Some of them, it goes on to describe that they would do kirtan amongst themselves. They would meet in the house of Advaita and talk about Krishna. And they even tried to, along with Advaita, they tried to preach to people, but they didn't seem to be able to get anywhere with it. Then Advaitacharya was so distressed, he began to fast. And the Vaishnavas also. And people were critical. They said they could not understand who was a Vaishnava or what the purpose of Sankirtan was. And they didn't like it. It says their hearts were filled with desires for wealth and children. So that was their focus. Get some money, have some offspring, and enjoy. Or I guess Charvak Muni, was it Charvak Muni? Get ghee and enjoy. So they had that sort of materialistic mentality. And when they would hear this chanting, they would say, "What madness! This Brahmana Srivas will ruin this village. The Mohammedan king is very cruel by nature. If he hears about this kirtan, the whole district will suffer." So they're saying, if he hears about it, and who do you reckon he's going to hear about it from? From them. Like the Pharisees, or like the, you know, caste Brahmanas. So someone else said, "I'll drive this Brahman out of town, break his house, and throw it in the Ganges. If we get rid of this Brahmana, then it will be good for the village. Otherwise, the Yavanas will take over the town." They referred to the followers of Islam as Yavanas at that time. So, generally, Yavana is, Prabhupada writes several purports about what a Yavana is. It refers to Turks, people originally from Turkey. But, of course, it also generally refers to people of the meat-eating races, like many of us were Yavanas, Leches. So, well, it says, when Advaitacharya, I said some of these things earlier, but this is the detailed version. Gave you the Reader's Digest version. When Advaitacharya heard these things, he became as angry as fire. Neglecting whether he was dressed properly, he spoke to all the Vaishnavas. It's kind of interesting detail that Vrindavan Das throws in here, that he didn't care about his appearance, in other words. He was so angry, he didn't even notice whether he was dressed or undressed. And then he spoke to all the Vaishnavas, "Listen, Srivas, Ganga Das, and Shuklambara, I will make Krishna descend for all to see. He will personally come and deliver one and all by preaching devotional service, with your help. If I fail to do this, then I will manifest four arms and take up my disc. I will sever the heads of the atheists, and then it will be confirmed that Krishna is my Lord and I am his servant." Now this is another interesting aspect. You know that Advaitacharya, initially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was always relating to him as a senior person. You know how like I get really irritated about this sometimes, not that I'm on this level, but I mean to say, you know, somebody, "Oh, you're a senior devotee," you know, and I think, "I'm not a senior anything." Yeah, trees are senior to me too. So Advaita didn't like it that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so respectful to him. Because he wanted to be treated as a servant. He considered himself a servant of Krishna. So Advaita actually, you know, right from the beginning, he was very determined that the Lord would treat him as a servant. But it didn't work. I mean, initially, he wasn't getting anywhere trying to get the Lord to treat him like a servant. So he started associating with these different Maya bodies and people that taught this philosophy called Yoga Vashishta. And so he was glorifying Gyan as the highest platform. So Lord Chaitanya heard something about this and he wasn't sure how could it be true. But he had gone to a house. This was after Nityananda had joined him in Navadvipa, and he was at a house of a Brahmin where the Brahmin tried to feed them wine and meat, so-called Brahmin. And they immediately ran out of the house and jumped in the river to purify themselves, and they floated downstream. Of course, this is all the arrangement of the Lord. He floated downstream. He came to... what's the name of Advaitacharya's place? Shantipur. they just floated near. Kind of, we used to do that in the Jamuna. I remember when I lived there, when the would start to flood. Of course, I don't know whether you can do it anymore, but the river would cut into the banks, and there'd be these high banks, and you could leap onto the banks into the river, and then you could float downstream for quite a long way. So the Guru Kulikas and I, we used to run down to as far down the river as we could, and leap in and float down the river. And while you're floating, you can just have conversations and, you know, chant, and it's great. So anyway, this Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are floating down the Ganges, talking, and they get out at Shantipur. And so then he'd heard about this business of Advaitacharya saying that Gyan was the highest philosophy, attaining moksha. So he said, "What is this I hear about you, you know, preaching like this, that Gyan is the highest?" He said, "Yes, yes, Gyan is the ultimate. Bhakti is, you know, not very important, but it's Gyan that's important." So I said, "What?" He said, "Then why did you call for me to descend here? That's what you think." And Advaitacharya just kept on insisting that Gyan was where, you know, was where it was at. So Lord Chaitanya started beating him, actually physically thrashing him. And Advaitacharya's wife was pleading for his life and crying. It says that Nityananda was laughing. And, you know, like Balaram was laughing when the residents of Vrindavan thought that he might drop the hill, that Krishna might drop the hill. He was chuckling. Haridas Thakur was constantly chanting, kind of fearfully, like, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna." He was beating him. And then Advaitacharya said, "Finally," he said, "now you're treating me like your servant." He said, you know, and then he made some very bold statements. I wish I could, you know, had a good memory. I could quote them exactly to you. But basically he was saying that I am Advaitacharya, and I, you know, call for you to come. And now, he said, you're treating me in the proper way like a servant. So he said, "Now give me the shelf of your lotus feet." And he dove down and grabbed Lord Chaitanya's feet. Then everybody started crying. Lord Chaitanya started crying. He was crying. The whole retinue, the whole gathering burst into tears, and then they began chanting and embracing each other. You know, if you think about it, if anybody were to witness all this, first of all, that some elderly gentleman's being beaten up by a powerful-looking young man, and then seeming to enjoy it, and then he's embracing the feet of Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya's crying and embracing him. You know, these people. And they still think that, of course, when they see us on the street, you know, they think, crazy. I remember the first time I ever saw devotees on the street in San Francisco in 1969. It took me a couple of years to join, because I was so like, well, I mean, first of all, at that time, having long hair was the thing. And these guys had shaved their heads. And they were wearing funny-looking clothes. And they were out there on the street in public chanting and jumping around and looking really, I thought, man, they must have taken so much LSD that they, because there was a song very popular at the time, "Break On Through to the Other Side," and by this group called The Doors. They call themselves The Doors because Aldous Huxley had written this book called The Doors of Perception. So they call themselves The Doors. "Break On Through to the Other Side." I thought, man, they must have really broken on through. And then I looked at them and I thought, I really admired them. I admired them and I thought, I could never do that. I mean, I was impressed, but I thought, wow. So it took a couple of years. Finally, they got to me. But anyway, this is a little off the topic. So anyway, this is the thing. What Advaitacharya is now saying, he wants to prove that he's Krishna's servant by causing him to descend and then acting as his servant, which of course he did. He would bring all the devotees to Jagannath Puri to see Lord Chaitanya. He would counsel people. He would, you know, he was a great. Anyway, you can't really glorify Advaitacharya in any acceptable way, but wonderful personality. So it says the devotees, they're becoming so unhappy that they had stopped, they couldn't eat. Now, can you imagine, you were looking, seeing all the people out in the street here at Oxford Street, and, oh, these people are suffering so much, I'm not going to eat anymore. Anybody feeling that way? But I mean, the point is, of course, that even if you don't feel that, you're still taking all kinds of risks to go out and speak to them and try to get them to take up Krishna consciousness. And that's following in the footsteps, not imitating. We can't pretend. Like I used to have, I'm sorry, I'm a little bit frivolous mood this morning, unfortunately. But I had this friend, this devotee friend. And, you know, we used to joke about the sahajiyas in Vrindavan because some of them would come in and do this whole routine in the temple, you know, like, oh, I'm in ecstasy. And then falling on the ground pretending to be, you know, like, completely in ecstasy. And there's a funny story that Prabhupada had said that if anybody does that, you find out if they're in ecstasy or not by kicking them. He was joking. He was joking. But this devotee, I won't mention any names, took it seriously. That's like another time Prabhupada was talking about who's that person that imitated Krishna in Krishna's pastimes? Pandraka. And he had two fake arms to make four. You know the story? Oh yeah, you should read the Krishna book. And Krishna didn't like it. And actually, Krishna killed him. So Prabhupada was talking about that, and then he brought up this so-called incarnation, Guru Maharshi. And they were telling Prabhupada some of the things he'd said and done. And Prabhupada said, and again, but that's the thing, it was very dangerous because people were so like, Prabhupada said. It's kind of Prabhupada said. Prabhupada said, kind of offhandedly, in reference to this pastime, yes, he should be killed. So this friend of mine, again, I'm not going to mention names, because he's actually a great soul. He said, he should be killed. And so this Guru Maharaj was coming to Houston, at the Astrodome. He was going to give a whole talk at the Astrodome. And so he said, he's going to be at the Astrodome. That's my chance. And so we had to spend like 3-4 hours convincing him that he shouldn't assassinate me. That it might look the movement look bad if he were to do that. So, anyway, I can't remember how I even got there. Taking the sahaji, oh yeah. So, find out if they're in ecstasy or not. So this devotee, this sahaji came in and started doing his whole routine in the temple. And so the devotee, went over and kicked him. And obviously he wasn't next. He leapt up and started shouting and screaming. All these people started shouting and screaming that they assaulted the sadhu. And there was a huge commotion, and finally he was brought to Prabhupada, and he told us that when he go out and you have to go out and pay her obeisances and ask for forgiveness. He probably was just shaking his head. He just couldn't believe it that he'd actually done that. Anyway, so all these devotees are practically giving up eating and any kind of material comforts. Then, shortly after, during this period, Nityananda appeared in Radha Desh. And there's a little description. By the order of the Lord, Sri Nityananda Ram, who is different from Ananta, first appeared in Radha Desh. He appeared from the womb of Padmavati in the village of Ekachakra on the auspicious 13th day of the waxing moon in the month of Magh. The Lord, who is the original father of everyone, accepted Hadai Pandit, the king of the Brahmanas, as his father. Lord Balaram is an ocean of mercy and the bestower of devotional service. He appeared as Sri Nityanandaram. Invisible to humans, the demigods loudly chanted, Jai, Jai, and showered flowers.
Jai, Jai,
Jai. From that day on, the district of Radha Desh became filled with prosperity. In order to deliver the fallen souls, Nityananda Prabhu accepted the dress of a mendicant and traveled throughout the world. As you know, he left home at an early age to be a brahmachari assistant of a Brahmin, elevated person, and traveled with him for some time. Ended up in Vrindavan. Then he heard about Lord Chaitanya's activities, and he went to Navadvip to join him. So this is the description of Lord Ananda's appearance. Now please hear how Krishna made his appearance. Sri Jagannath Mishra lived in Navadvip. He was just like Vasudev, and he was expert in following his prescribed duties. He was greatly magnanimous and the best of the brahmanas. Indeed, I can find no comparison to him. All the good qualities of Kasyapa, Dasharatha, Vasudev, and Nanda Maharaj were found in the person of Jagannath Mishra. His wife was the most chaste Sachi Devi, the universal mother and personification of devotional service to the Supreme Lord. After all her daughters expired, the most fortunate Vishwarup appeared as her son. She had, I think it was 8 altogether, daughters all that passed away, and then Vishwarup appeared. Similarly, very similar to Krishna's pastimes, all these children died, then Balaram appeared, and then Krishna appeared. So it says, she, Vishwarup, was as attractive as Cupid personified. His mother and father were jubilant on seeing him. And as you know, I think most of you know that Vishwarup later took sannyas and went and left home. And Mother Sachi was quite heartbroken about it. And then when Lord Chaitanya started showing signs of renunciation later on, she became very anxious. As you can imagine, having such sons who would not be attached. So, but then later he left his body, Vishwarup, and it said that he remained mixed with Nityananda Prabhu. So they linked together, they became one person. Because Vishwarup was actually Balaram also. So it says he was as attractive as Cupid personified. He was detached from the time of his birth, and he realized the purport of the scriptures in his very childhood. As the entire world became devoid of devotion to Lord Vishnu, the future symptoms of Kali began to manifest in the beginning of the age. As Sri Ananta loudly chanted, Jai, Jai, Jagannath Mishra and Sachidev heard this sound vibration as if it were a dream. So there was kind of a, what do you call that one? Sort of like a warning ahead of time, not a warning.
Premonition.
Huh? Premonition, thank you. See, he's a brahmachari, he's actually got memory. I don't have memory. But yes, there was a premonition. Both husband and wife manifested brilliant spiritual effulgence, which common people could not perceive. It's like it was about to happen. Those who had spiritual vision could see it, but ordinary people couldn't. Knowing that the Supreme Lord would appear, personalities like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva came to offer prayers. Now please hear with devotion the prayers offered by the demigods headed by Brahma. By hearing these prayers, one's mind becomes attached to Krishna. So I was thinking, I know that they're a little bit lengthy, the prayers, but there's a chance that your mind might become attached to Krishna. So, I don't know. We still have some time, so I'm going to try to read some of these prayers. I'll probably break off and say something foolish every now and then, but I'll try not to. These are the prayers offered by all the great demigods. All glories to Sriman Mahaprabhu, the father of all living entities. All glories to the Supreme Lord who has incarnated to inaugurate the Sankirtan movement. All glories to the protector of Vedic principles, saintly persons and brahmanas. All glories to the personification of time which destroys the non-devotees. Actually, I got something. Time. Prabhupada says the atheist who doesn't believe in God, he'll meet Krishna's death. So here we see. All glories to the personification of time which destroys the non-devotees. So everybody meets Krishna in the end. All glories to the Supreme Lord who possesses a pure spiritual body. All glories to the fully independent Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the shelter of innumerable universes, yet you have entered the womb of Mother Sachi Devi. Who can understand your supreme will? Creation, maintenance, and annihilation are simply part of your pastimes. For one who destroys the entire creation simply by his desire, can he not kill Ravana or Kamsa simply by giving an order? Still, he appeared in the house of Dasharatha and Vasudeva in order to kill them. Therefore, my Lord, who can understand the cause of your appearance other than you yourself? So this means Krishna comes according to his own sweet will. He's not forced by anything. He may appear in a scheduled way, but it doesn't mean that he has to. He can appear whenever he likes. By your order, each one of your servants can deliver innumerable universes. Still, these are very profound, these prayers. They're very nice, actually. Still, you incarnate yourself to teach religious principles to all and thus make the earth glorious. Oh, my Lord, in Satya Yuga, you have appeared with a white complexion to preach the principles of austerity by your personal example. You wear a deer skin, you carry a dandan water pot, and you wear matted locks of hair. In this way, you incarnate as a brahmachari to establish the principles of religion. So he's talking here about the Lord as he appears in Satya Yuga. You appear in Treta Yuga with a beautiful red complexion. Although you were the Lord of sacrifice, you set the example by engaging in the performance of sacrifice. You carry a sacrificial ladle and spoon in your hands and encourage everyone to perform sacrifice. In Dwapara Yuga, you appear with a transcendental blackish complexion that resembles a monsoon cloud. You preach the process of deity worship from house to house. You wear yellow cloth, and you are decorated with the mark of Srivatsa. As a great king, you personally demonstrate the process of deity worship. You appear in Kali Yuga as a brahmana with a golden complexion to inaugurate the congregational chanting of the holy names, which is unknown through the Vedas. Therefore, you are the source of innumerable incarnations. Who has the ability to enumerate all of them? So this is actually in line with the verse, which is Paribhas Sutra, the Ate Chang Sa Kalapam Sa Krishna Stu Bhagavan Shayam, that he's avatari. He's not an avatar, he's avatar. He's a source of avatars. In the form of Matsya, you enjoy in the waters of annihilation. In the form of Korma, you are the shelter of all living entities. In the form of Hayagriva, you save the Vedas by killing the original demons, Madhu and Kaitava. In the form of Varaha, you delivered the earth. And in the form of Narsingha, you tore apart the demon, Hiranyakashipu. In the wonderful form of Vamana, you delivered Pali Maharaj. And in the form of Parushuram, you rid the earth of Kshatriyas. In the form of Ramachandra, you killed Ravana. And in the form of Balaram, you performed innumerable pastimes. In the form of Buddha, you exhibited compassion. Why do we say Buddha exhibited compassion? And? Why was he preaching that? Do you remember? Not authorized for this age. Right. In order to do that, he had to actually reject Vedic literature to try to curb down the killing. So, and in the form of Kalki. Kalki is a little different. Kalki comes at the end of Kali Yuga and just there's just killing of the demons. Chai. Well, of course, these are the demons that cannot be salvaged, no matter what arrangements the Lord makes. I mean, Lord Chaitanya tries to make all kinds of arrangements. I mean, he sent Prabhupada, he sent so many to try to help those who are determined to remain in this demonic consciousness when Kalki comes as death, time personified. You know, what do they say in the pubs? It's time? Is that what they say? Is that? No, I know. I'm not saying you have, but some of you may know. I just heard this. I think it's time, gentlemen. In the old days, anyway, it's time, gentlemen. It's time. So Kalki, it's kind of like that. It's time. So, in the form of Dhanvantara, you delivered nectar to the demigods. And in the form of Hansa, you spoke on the absolute truth of Brahma and others. In the form of Narada, you carry a veena and sing your glories. And in the form of Vyas, you explain the truth about yourself. In the form of Krishna, Your unlimited enchanting Goloka pastimes include those of all other incarnations. In this incarnation, as a devotee, you will invest all your transcendental energies in the performance of kirtan. The whole world will be filled with the sound of sankirtan, and pure devotional service will be preached from house to house. How can we describe the happiness that this earth planet will enjoy when you dance along with your servants? So the earth itself, it says the hairs of the grass, or the shrubbery, the vegetation, actually stood up in ecstasy when Lord Chaitanya would dance. The mere presence of those who constantly meditate on your lotus feet vanquishes all inauspiciousness. As such persons dance, the touch of their lotus feet destroys all the inauspiciousness of the world. By their glance, the 10 directions are purified. Such are your glories, such is the dancing, and such are your servants, that when they dance with their arms raised, the disturbances in the heavenly planets are destroyed. My dear king, when Krishna's devotees dance in kirtan, they destroy the inauspiciousness of the earth by the touch of their feet, the directions by their glance, and the higher planetary systems by their upraised arms. Jai! You know, you can almost feel, I mean, I'm not a good medium, but you can almost feel Vrindavan Das Thakur's ecstasy in just even saying these things. You know, he's speaking the absolute truth, but he becomes poetic in it because of his ecstasy. He's impelled by ecstasy. And when a devotee's impelled by ecstasy, they become kavi, they become poetic. They become a poet. And they say wonderful things. So this is a great statement. the prayer of sort of Damodar Prabhu, who had also kept the Kadata, a notebook of all the latter pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he wrote this famous prayer. Anarpita charin chirat karunaya vitirna kalo samarpayitam unatojvala rasam svabhakti sriyam hari purata sundara jyuti kadamba sandipitaha sadavidaya kandare shpuratu vasachinandanaha. This means, may the Supreme Lord, who is known as the son of Srimati Sachi Devi, be transcendentally situated in the innermost core of your heart, resplendent with the radiance of molten gold. He has descended in the age of Kali by his causeless mercy to bestow what no incarnation has ever offered before, the most elevated mellow of devotional service, the mellow of conjugal love. So now the prayer, so that's the prayer by Swarup Damodar. Here now the demigods continue. You easily award liberation, but you keep devotional service hidden. We have a desire to attain that devotional service. So the demigods are putting in a plug for their own salvation here. Well, you know, even in the Ishopanishad, he says, what does he say? He said, remember everything that I did for you. Remember? Not exactly in those words, but kind of like that. So, you know, it's authorized. You can pray that you can attain devotional service just like the demigods. Oh Lord, you will freely distribute the treasure of devotional service. So here we come to that concept again from the verse we quoted at the beginning, Namo Mahavada Nyaya Krishna Prema Vrita, freely distributing this love of God. They say you'll be doing this, freely distributing the treasure of devotional service throughout the world simply due to your causeless mercy. By the chanting of whose holy names all sacrifices are performed, that Lord has now appeared in Navadvip. O Lord, please be merciful to us so that we may have the fortune to see your pastimes. The long-cherished desire of the Ganges will now be fulfilled when you sport in her waters. So the Ganges have been praying to the presence of the Lord and Lord Chaitanya, of course. He sported in the water of the Ganges. He did a lot of naughty things, actually. He used to sort of kind of torture the Brahmins who were trying to do their puja and stuff, steal their stuff and splash water on them. You who are seen through the yogi's meditation as Yogeshwara will now be seen in the village of Navadvipa. We therefore offer our respectful obeisances to Sri Navadvipa, where the Lord appeared in the house of Sachi Devi and Jagannath. In this way, the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, would daily offer prayers in seclusion. The Lord, who is the shelter of all universes, remained in the womb of Sachi until the Falguni Purnima gradually approached. There's a little purport. It says, the Supreme Lord, who is the resting place of innumerable Vaikuntha planets and material universes composed of 14 planetary systems, has appeared in the womb of Sachi. The Lord remained in the womb of Sachi until the full moon night of the month of Falguna in the year 1486. The words Sachi Garva Sindhu refer to the form of pure goodness. Next verse. All the auspicious symptoms present throughout unlimited universes appeared together on that full moon night. Thus, the Lord simultaneously appeared, along with the congregational chanting of the holy names, which he inaugurated on the pretext of a lunar eclipse. Who has the power to understand? So it was supposed to be a full moon night, but slight hiccup, there was a lunar eclipse, because a different moon was appearing. It says, who has the power to understand the activities of the Lord? By his desire, Rahu covered the moon. When the inhabitants of Navadvipa saw the eclipse, they began to chant the auspicious names of Adi. Apparently, during a lunar eclipse is the only time these people would chant. So you see how clever the Lord is. He arranged to take his birth at a time when people would actually be absorbed in chanting the holy name, bathing in the sacred river, and chanting to escape the inauspicious effects of Rahu. So it says millions of people went to take bath in the Ganges while chanting, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. The whole of Nadia was filled with the sound vibration of the name of Hari. Indeed, the sound vibration filled the entire universe and beyond. Hearing this wonderful vibration, all the devotees remarked, let there be a perpetual eclipse. You know, what a relief for the devotees. Everybody in Navadvipa chanting the holy name was like, you know, finally, even with Lord Chaitanya's birth, even with his appearance, there was ecstatic chanting. Because the devotees were also chanting along with everybody else, and people had no idea what was about to take place. But they could understand something auspicious. Well, they said, from the great happiness that we are feeling today, it can be understood that Krishna must have appeared. They were speculating, but they were correctly speculating. That's called philosophical speculation, not mental speculation. So as the devotees all went to take bath in the Ganges, the vibration of the name of Hari was continually heard from all directions. Whether one was young, old, woman, pious, or impious, everyone was engaged in chanting the name of Hari while observing the eclipse. All one could hear was, Hari Bol, Hari Bol! Thus the name of Lord Hari was heard throughout the entire universe. The demigods showered flowers on all directions, and they played kettle drums as they chanted, Jai! Jai!
Jai! Jai!
This is going to have a great time here. At that very moment, the life of all living entities, Sri Sachinandana made his appearance. Jai Sachinandana! Jai! Jai! Wow. When the moon was covered by Rahu, when the ocean of the holy names was manifest, so here you see Vrindavan Das Thakur now, he's becoming ecstatic again. When the moon was, it's like, you know, it's poetry, you see. When the moon was covered by Rahu, when the ocean of the holy names was manifest, when Kali was subdued, and when the flag of victory was raised, at that time, the Supreme Lord appeared, and the 14 worlds filled with the sound of Jai! Jai!
Jai!
This will teach you to invite me to give class.
I'm coming back tomorrow.
The happiness of the people of Nadia daily increased, and their lamentation was vanquished as they saw the moon-like Lord Gauranga. Kettle drums were sounded, hundreds of conch shells were blown, and flutes and horns were played. In this way, Vrindavan Das Thakur sings the glories of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sri Nityananda Prabhu. The Lord's beautiful bodily features cannot be perceived, for they outshine the rays of the sun. His broad eyes, which are upturned at the ends, have no comparison. Due to the appearance of Sri Gauranga in this world, the sound vibration of Hari's name spread throughout the universe up to Brahmaloka. The Lord's broad chest is this. So this description now is the Lord's appeared. Now he's giving a description of his form. The Lord's broad chest is smeared with bright sandalwood pulp and decorated with a flower garland. The Lord's sweet face is as soothing as the full moon, and his long arms stretched to his knees. All the living entities of the world are blessed to see Sri Chaitanya. Some dance, some chant, and some loudly exclaim, "Jai! Jai!
Jai! Jai! Jai!"
Kali, however, feels sad and laments. Sri Chaitanya is the crown on the head of the four Vedas, but sinful and foolish people cannot understand this. Sri Vrindavan Das Thakur sings the glories of Sri Chaitanya Chandra and Sri Nityananda Prabhu. As Sri Gaurachandra appeared, the 10 directions become filled with bliss. So this is just a little, in case you don't know what the 10 directions are. Bhaktisiddhanta explains it. He says, the word Dasha Dike, the 10 directions, refers to the east, west, north, south, northeast, northwest, southeast, southwest, up and down. So that's the 10 directions. So all the 10 directions became filled with bliss. So it means everywhere there was a blissful feeling. People were feeling really happy. The Lord's beauty defeats that of millions of cupids. He laughs upon hearing his holy names chanted. You know, even devotees sometimes, there was a godbrother of Prabhupada, Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, who was a one more of the Bhajanandi Mood, although wherever he went in India, he got people chanting. But whenever he would chant, he would start laughing also. He would laughing and chanting at the same time. So here it says that Lord Chaitanya, when he would hear the holy names, he would begin to laugh with pleasure. The Lord's face and eyes are most sweet, and his body is decorated with the signs of a king. His lotus feet are marked with a flag and a thunderbolt. All his limbs attract the minds of all people. By his advent, all danger is vanquished and all prosperity is manifested. Accepting Sri Chaitanya and Nityananda Prabhu as my life and soul, I, Vrindavan Das, sing the glories of their lotus feet. Hearing that Lord Chaitanya was incarnated, all the demigods became overjoyed. They are overwhelmed with ecstasy on seeing the Lord's face, which destroys all misery. Ananta, Brahma, Shiva, and other demigods accept the form of human beings and chant, "Hari, Hari!" So they just say, "Hey, this is a great chance for us." And they go down and take human forms and they take part. On the pretext of the eclipse, no one, however, can recognize them. The people of Nadia run in the 10 directions. That means they were running up and down. Anyway, while loudly chanting, "Hari, Hari!" The demigods and human beings mix together, and the whole of Navadvip is filled with ecstasy. All the demigods come to the courtyard of Sachi Devi and offer their obeisances. Due to the darkness of the eclipse, no one can recognize them. Such are the mysterious pastimes of Sri Chaitanya. Some demigods offer prayers. Someone holds an umbrella. Another waves a chamara. Some happily shower flowers. Others dance. And some play musical instruments. This is going to be like perfect timing. I'm going to finish this just at exactly at 10, I think. Lord Gaurhari descended along with his devotees, but the atheist did not understand a thing. Accepting Sri Chaitanya and Nityananda Prabhu as my life and soul, I, Vrindavan Das, sing the glories of the lotus feet. The demigods, he's repeating this verse in between every few verses now. This is his ecstasy. It says sometimes when people are in ecstasy, they begin to say the same thing over and over again. They don't know what they're doing. So much ecstasy. So he says the demigods play kettle drums and dindim drums. Does anybody know what that? What's a dindim drum? Anybody?
It's the same as Lord Shiva's.
Okay. Chant the auspicious sound of Jai and sing in sweet melodies. The demigods think, today we will see the Lord, who is unknown through the Vedas. Therefore, let us not waste time. In this way, the residents of Amaravati are in ecstasy, and an auspicious commotion arises. They decorate themselves to go see the Lord. Due to our great fortune, we will see Sri Chaitanya and Navadvipa. Being overjoyed in the birth of the Lord of Nadia, the demigods repeatedly embrace and kiss each other without reservation or consideration of whether one is a friend or a stranger. So it must have been some startled people. In this joyous condition, they come to Navadvipa and hear the sound vibration of Hari's names from all sides. There, they taste Gaura's ecstatic emotions and become overwhelmed as they sing his glories. There, in Saji's house, they see the beautiful form of Lord Gauranga, who resembles millions of moons combined together. In the guise of human beings, and on the pretext of the eclipse, they all loudly chant the name of Hari!
Hari! Hari!
Sri Gaura Chandra appears along with his energies, but the atheist could not understand a thing. Accepting Sri Chaitanya and Nityananda Prabhu as my life and soul, I, Vrindavan Das, sing the glories of their lotus feet. Thus ends the translation of the Gaudiya Bhashya of Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, chapter 2, entitled The Lord's Appearance. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki! So, if there's any, let's see, we've got 2 minutes left. Any questions, comments, critiques? Yes?
It's not a question. Can you repeat again when they raise their hands and they feel all the stress?
Oh, I'm trying to find it. Well, while I'm looking that up, anything else?
I also wanted a clarification. You said his face, there's something about it in his face, about his eyes and his mouth. I didn't catch it, but they said it
was. You see, you know, you're supposed to be a brahmachari. Yeah, I.
Slitted eyes. Slitted. Was it slitted eyes?
No.
The end and the eye.
Up, I think, turned up slightly.
Ah, okay. Thank you.
Just remind me again what the verse was. That is a great verse.
Just when they step, the body's step on the ground.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll have to. I'll look it up after class because I think we're going to run out of time.
Which is the chapter?
It's in the second chapter. You can here have a look.
Thank you.
30 seconds. Well, I'm trying to, you know, because sometimes, you know, people come and they keep going and going, and you know, people get tired. So,
from this hymn, the song we sang this morning, in the first verse, it says,
sorry, just from a very quick question. This song we sang this morning, Sri Shutashka.
That's okay, never mind.
Anyway, the song this morning. Right, it says there, Lord Chaitanya, he makes ever new jokes, causes much laughter. Do you know? Can you make some comments about?
Do I know of any Lord Chaitanya's jokes? I remember reading that he didn't joke in his household life. He made one joke once or something. Actually, something to his wife. He joked with his wife one time. So the other jokes must have come later on after he took sannyas. So I don't know. I don't know. Anybody know of any Lord Chaitanya's jokes? Well, he used to make jokes with the Brahmins, you know, when they were trying to bathe in the Ganges. I know that.
I think he was trying to
right, well, thank you very much for being so tolerant. And I hope you had a good time. And at the same time, we've heard some of the glories of Lord Chaitanya. So thank you very much. I don't know what's next, so would you like to take over?
Hey, thank you very much, Rupa Vilas Prabhu. Very ecstatic class. So please, everyone can join me in expressing our gratitude and appreciation for this very senior... This is from last Radhasami. I'm going to be back.
Hare Krishna.
No Hare Bolts.
Okay, no Hare Bolts. Okay. So we can express our gratitude and appreciation for Rupa Vilas Prabhu by chanting very loudly the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra.
Hare Krishna! Hare Krishna! 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 Hare!